sweet voice is calling, calling me softly.
Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I know those of you who might have been out yesterday and today think St. Patrick's Day has already happened. It actually is Thursday. It is Thursday. It was not yesterday. It is not today. And you can also vote on Tuesday. This is my great pleasure to have Fern Schumer Chapman in here for the entire 9 o'clock hour to talk about her many books. But her many books are focused on one thing, and it is rediscovering history through people. The latest book, which literally made me cry, sort of happy tears, is Like Finding My Twin, now in eighth grade class, reunited to Holocaust refugees. And they were kind of happy tears. Fern, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
Your first book, Motherland, Beyond the Holocaust, A Mother-Daughter Journey to Reclaim the Past, was published in 2000. This is a story of you and your mom. Your mom came... you cannot even imagine. I know it is taking place now with various ethnic groups who are emigrating here under not the happiest circumstances. But your mom coming here as a 12-year-old, is the nature of how harrowing that was is almost unimaginable to me. Did you know about it from the time you were a kid? How forthcoming was your mom?
Not at all.
Yeah. That's typical, is it not?
It's very typical. My mother was what we would now call an unaccompanied minor. She came from Nazi Germany to the United States by herself. Her parents sensed the growing anti-Semitism.
This is 1938.
This was 1938. Yeah. They knew that they could not survive there, and they sent their daughter to relatives in Chicago, but my mother had never met these people before because the uncle had come in probably in 1920.
Yeah, in an earlier wave of immigrants.
Right.
Much just the notion, and that too is a deeply emotional break in that we're not going to survive this man called Hitler and these idiots who are allied with him, and you have to go. The emotional depth of that, can you fathom that? You've written about it so beautifully and articulately, it still gets to me.
I don't think I can fully fathom it, even though I've written three books.
Yeah.
So much of this was hidden when I was a child, and my mother coped with all of these losses by simply shutting it down.
Yeah. When did you realize, how old were you when you realized, you get to a certain age, which it might have been something like 12 or 11, 12, where you're like, Mom, where did you grow up? Who were your friends? That curiosity is there. Were there answers?
Well, I think children sense the places they're never to go with their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sensed that this was taboo. Mm. I knew she had come from some town in Germany. I didn't know what happened or why. I remember her once saying something about her mother, and it suddenly dawned on me, oh, my gosh.
You had a mom.
She had a mother. I remember her taking an atlas down and opening this to the Germany page.
Sure.
And pointing to this area and telling my brother and me that this is where she was from. But the town wasn't even on most maps. And that's actually one of the most fascinating aspects of this. The town is so small that it wasn't on the map. Mm. There were 2,000 people in the town when she was born in 1925. Two Jewish families. Her family had helped settle this town in 1721.
Wow.
So all of this helped to give me this unique window.
When did you start to learn all of that, though?
I really didn't know much as a child. In fact, I remember one incident that sort of pointed to some of the secrets that were hidden from me. And that was when I turned 12, she gave me a first edition copy of The Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh, my God.
And she said, you must read this. Now, my mother never bought hardcovers, and she never...
Yeah.
She never really insisted that you read a book. So that was the first indication, and I recognized at that point that maybe she was trying to tell me something. But ultimately, she never spoke.
Mm.
And it really wasn't until I grew up and had gotten married and had kids of
became
my own.
Became a reporter yourself, yeah, at the Tribune for a time.
Right. And then after I had had two sons and become pregnant with my third child, she came to me and said, I want to go back to my town in Germany. And because this was such a small town, I knew I had a unique window on a story.
You sure did. What do you think? Was there some, was it simply you having kids, or was it she reaching a certain age? And was that part of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think there's so many parts
yeah,
to that.
Yeah.
One is I was talking about the possibility of having a daughter, and I think that forced some reflection on our relationship, which was very limited, because if somebody doesn't share their history, you don't know too much.
Right, of course. Of course.
I think, too,
did you ever ask, I mean, as a kid, did you ever get into, I mean, and here is where it gets very dark, saying, you know, your little friends growing up where you grew up here, they had grandmothers. And you must have asked at some point, Mom, do I have a grandmother? And she, I don't know how she could tell you.
You know, I
think the answer is
I
no.
really understood that
you
I was
did,
never
yeah.
to ask. It was such a vulnerable place in her.
Where was your dad from?
My dad is was American, and he was a very ambitious and very successful doctor. And I always say that she didn't want to talk about the old country, and he didn't want to hear about it.
Yeah,
so it
yeah.
worked out pretty well for a while.
That's really a classic thing. I'm spending this entire hour with Fern Schumer Chapman talking about her three books, Motherland, Beyond the Holocaust, A Mother-Daughter Journey to Reclaim the Past, then a sort of fictionalized version of that, sort of, called Is It Night or Day? And then the most recent book, which is a sort of outgrowth or manifestation of Is It Night or Day? That one called, like, Finding My Twin, How an Eighth Grade Class, and that class is here, ladies and gentlemen, reunited to Holocaust refugees. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Welcome back. I'm spending this whole hour with Fern Schumer Chapman. That is her website, too, FernSchumerChapman. Dan will put it on the website for you, so you don't have to go grab a pen or something. We're talking about her three books, the most recent of which is Like Finding My Twin, How an Eighth Grade Class Reunited Two Holocaust Refugees. Been talking about her mom, who came here all alone, sort of all alone. That's part of the story, too. She came here as a 12-year-old. Her parents, understandably fearful of fearful and maybe even knowing what was transpiring in Germany in the late 30s as Hitler went about his ugly business. She and her mom eventually decided, who decided? Was it you or your mom who said, come on, honey, we got to go back to my hometown? Because that is a huge, huge emotional leap.
I think she decided.
Okay.
And I think there were several reasons behind it. One is I think her sister had actually, and this is amazing, the parents were able to get both kids out at two different times. And the sister had deeply hoped to return, but sadly the sister died young. And I think my mother felt that she wanted to return there to fulfill this dream.
Sure,
that the sister
sure.
had. In addition, I think something happens when people reach a certain life stage. And I've read in magazines like Psychology Today mm-hmm. that when they get 50 years past the traumatic event, they suddenly recognize that if they don't start talking, they're going to take these stories to their graves.
Very interesting.
And so I've actually had the experience, Rick, where I've given speeches in assisted living homes and somebody will call me over and say, we need to talk. And it'll be an elderly person. This actually happened to me. And he said, I need to tell you something. And he had tears streaming down his face. He was probably 85, 90 years old. And finally, I thought, my gosh, what's he going to tell me? And he took me in a corner and he said, I've never told anyone this before. And I said, what is it? And I was almost afraid to hear what he was
sure.
going to say. He said, I was a liberator.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't matter where you were in this experience.
Yeah.
It was so traumatizing that they have shrouded this in
Well, it's a self-protective. I'm no psychologist, but that's, you know, sort of self-protection 101 is you bury and bury and bury these memories that were so shocking or caused emotional upheaval when they happened.
Even for somebody who was a liberator and did the most noble thing imaginable.
Well, but also the shocking scene. Yeah. I mean, I certainly wasn't there, but I can only imagine the shocking scene. So your mom is kind of putting the pressure on your mom. He's kind of putting the pressure on you, saying, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Well, she called me, and I was 6 months pregnant with my third child. And I thought, you want to go now?
Maybe not now, Mom.
And the doctor said, no, don't go. And I thought to myself, she's never spoken of her own history. There is this black hole within me. I'm becoming a mother myself. I can't just say no. I can't pass this up. What if I do that?
Right, right. I know.
And then
sure.
I don't have the opportunity in the future. Maybe she'll decide she doesn't want to ever go. That was it. One-time offer.
Mm.
So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do this. And that was the break. That was the opening because suddenly she saw her own history and she could no longer hide from me.
Yeah. So she was just an outpouring of, this is what my town looked like. This is what my parents looked like.
Right.
Did she have pictures then? Because you have a haunting, haunting picture in the book, haunting to me at least, and maybe tender to you of your the last photograph of 12-year-old Edith with her mother and father. It haunts me. It just haunts me. You didn't go while you were pregnant, did you? I can't remember.
I did go.
Oh, my Lord.
I went on the first trip, which is captured in Motherland.
Yeah.
And I was 6 months pregnant. And it was life-changing.
Were you, I don't know, were either of you trepidatious?
Yes, we both were.
I mean, had you contacted anybody in that town beforehand?
No. We went cold. And when one of the things that happens is as soon as we arrive, she turns to me and says, we can't leave Germany without seeing Mina. And I said, okay, who's Mina?
Who's that?
She said, oh, she was a sister to me. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, she hardly spoke of her own history. Suddenly she has this sister of sorts.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, her family didn't have any money. It was the Depression. And so my family took her in. She was supposed to do chores.
Yeah.
But in fact, she became
part of the family. Yeah.
So much of Motherland is hung on this journey to try to locate Mina because she was the only other person who had left the town. And the reason she had left is she was outspoken and an activist and had resisted Hitler and all of the policies.
What was it like for you? You captured brilliantly, and there's a great narrative drive to Motherland. You didn't speak German.
No.
Your mom. I just the whole no. I don't want to spoil anything in Motherland for you people who should go out and read it. It's an in some ways it's an adventure story. Yes.
It's like a mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't, you come along with me, and what I tried to do is make you feel what I felt as I slowly learned who my mother was, what had formed her, who the family was. And that was really the beginning of this very long journey. And as you know, Rick, every time I write a book, I think I'm done.
I know,
something
but
else happens.
Well, but this is the amazing thing about this, this what I'm calling your trilogy here. I mean, it really is Motherland. Then you decided to sort of, and these books have won a number of awards, and this is why Fern Schumer Chapman gives speeches across the country, many of them at middle schools, and you will hear about that because she's on for this whole hour. You decided to talk to me about, in 3 minutes we have before break, the transition from the nonfiction narrative and why you felt maybe it took, I mean, it was 10 years later that you published Is It Night or Day?
I didn't know how my mother had gotten here. In Motherland, I wrote around.
Right, exactly.
And a reader called me and said, I read your book, and I don't think you know how your mother got here. I didn't know because she didn't know. She was 12. All she
right.
knew is a program had
right.
brought her to the United
right.
States.
Well, and you have to also give that. I don't care what kind of 12-year-old you are. You are encountering everything new. You have got to be on some level. Remember the first day you walked into a new school, ladies and gentlemen? You were terrified. Terrified. This is someone getting on a boat going to a new country, okay?
Doesn't speak the language.
Right. Doesn't know who she's going. Doesn't know where she's going, who she's going to see.
Who the relatives are.
Yep. Yep. So you can imagine the fearfulness.
The dislocation.
So when this guy said it to you, what did you say to yourself?
Well, it was a woman, and I wish I had gotten her name. I didn't. She said, I think I can help you, and I'm going to direct you to a website, the1000children.org. And sure enough, I learned about a program which led to this next book.
And did your mom, did you sort of have to pull memories from her? Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, for, I had to pull memories.
And then you decided to fictionalize that tale. But that tale, even being fictionalized, led to the current book, like Finding My Twin, How an Eighth Grade Class Reunited Two Holocaust Refugees. I'm going to read a couple portions from that book, and we'll discuss that after a short break.
With deep affection and recollection,
it's the voice of Patty Homan, because St. Patrick's Day is Thursday. It wasn't yesterday, and it certainly wasn't Saturday. Those were the parade days. I'm continuing on with my friend and astonishingly talented author, Fern Schumer Chapman. We have talked about motherhood, in which she and her mom, who came here as a 12-year-old in 1938 from Nazi Germany, and then Fern got a call from someone saying, hey, how'd your mother get here? Basically, right? Saying, wait a minute.
Saying you don't know how your mother got here.
You don't even know how
help.
Your mother got here. How did she? That is the basis of Is It Night or Day?
Right.
Fern's sort of fictionalized story of her mother's journey here. How'd she get here?
Well, most of us don't realize that there actually was a program similar to the Kinder Transport, which saved... Kinder Transport saved about 10,000 Jewish children.
Right.
And brought them to England. What did the Americans do? Well, as you know, Roosevelt did not want a role in the war or the rescue effort.
Mm-hmm.
There was tremendous anti-Semitism in this country.
No question.
At that time. And so Lutherans, Quakers, and Jewish groups organized. They brought over 10 children at a time on cruise ships, 100 a year between 1934 and 45. Ultimately, they saved about 1,400 children. This program is known as the 1,000 Children, and my mother was one of the 1,000 children.
Did she realize that?
No. And actually, there was a reunion of the 1,000 children in Chicago in 2004. We walked into one of these big ballrooms in one of the downtown hotels, and there were all of these people. And she thought she had come over with 900 kids on a ship.
Right.
And she turned to me and she goes, I didn't ever realize there were other ships.
Yeah, I didn't know. Who are these people? There was, however, one special person, was there not, Fern?
There was somebody very special. Because all of these children had left family, friends, homeland, identity behind, these kids who were traveling alone paired off and bonded very quickly. And Edith became best friends in the 10-day journey, in the 10-day crossing, with a girl named Gerda Katz. And that may seem hard to believe, but because this was such an emotionally charged transition, the two girls were inseparable.
Well, also think of the loneliness. Think of the human need to talk to somebody.
Right, right.
And they became, as you say in the book, they became like sisters, didn't they?
They were like sisters in history, historical sisters.
Yeah.
They both shared the same terrible uprooting losses. And I think each felt the other, they were the only people who understood what they had lived through.
Yeah.
Sadly, well, they arrived in New York. They had a 3-day tour of New York City, the Statue of Liberty and Radio City Music Hall to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which was just released, shopping on Fifth Avenue, and all sorts of exciting things. Of course, these are kids who had never even seen a skyscraper.
Yeah, no kidding.
Never been out of rural Germany. Anyway.
Well, they're also hearing, you know, Manhattan is Manhattan, and your mother is from a town of 2,000 that is not even on a map. Yeah. The sensory overload must have been something.
It was sensory overload. So the two friends became even closer during those 3 days. Finally, they had to say a goodbye to each other, and they would become as lost to one another as the families they left at home in Germany.
Mm.
And the reason for that is the friend, Gerda Katz, gave or took Edith's address. Because Edith knew she was living with relatives here.
In Chicago.
Gerda didn't know who she would be living with. She knew she was going to Seattle, Washington. On the Zephyr out to Seattle,
she lost it.
She lost the address. And so the two lost touch with each other in 1938 and really lost that touchstone of home. And
a massive touchstone.
Right.
Because your mother's parents and other relatives did not survive.
Right.
The brutality and genocide of Adolf Hitler. And this woman, this child, Gerda, you cannot even imagine the importance of her connection with your mom on that boat journey and those glorious days in New York. I'm going to wait till the commercial to get to finding my twin. Your mom comes here, and these people are nice to her, right? Relatively.
The relatives?
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I think it was not a great placement,
right,
even though they were relatives.
Yeah.
The uncle had married an American woman who had had quite a bit of success and felt she had married beneath herself and wasn't too keen on the idea of having to take in a child to help pay the rent, because these people did receive a $48 stipend a month.
Mm.
So it did help.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure.
Times were very tough. It was the Depression. So, and a lot of these refugee children were treated like household help.
Oh, yeah.
And my mother was among them.
Yeah. Did she bury a lot of that, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there were several traumas. There's the trauma of leaving your home and of being a child immigrant, and then ultimately of being placed in an unloving home.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. You make that eminently clear that there was not a lot of love in that home. Then take me through your mother's life until she meets your father, and then we're going to go into this after a little commercial.
Well, I think the thing that's so important to understand about these child immigrants is how difficult it is to become Americanized.
Sure.
You know, she had all the wrong clothes. She didn't speak the language. And this is true for any of these immigrants who come in today.
Well, it's happening now. I mean, there have been, I mean, this country has had its ups and downs about being welcoming to different immigrant groups. But this is as topical as it gets. As idiot Trump wants to build a wall, for instance. It is a common shared experience to come to a new country, the United States of America, where you don't speak the language and you don't know what your future is going to be. It might as well be like going to Mars.
I think it was like going to Mars,
yeah,
for her. And she was teased mercilessly and bullied. She was identified when she became 14 as an enemy alien because at that point the United States had entered the war with Germany, and we were identifying all of the possible spies,
yeah,
who might be,
yeah,
sending information back to Germany.
Yeah, the terrifying 14-year-old spies, yeah.
But
know,
this is what happened. And,
sure.
And the amazing thing about her story is she actually tells students when we often speak that she has a very fond memory of one boy. And this was a boy whose name she still remembers. This is 70 years, 80 years,
wow,
later. His name is Doug. And the reason she remembers him is he smiled at her.
Oh.
And I think that this was one of the few people who wasn't bullying and cruel and actually made her feel like he saw her.
That's such a small kindness. And when you, you know, think to yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, what it means to... You toss him away, a smile at somebody, and listen to the effect that it had on your mom, Edith. So that's the story as it stands right now. And Fern Schumer Chapman would go to various schools to share the story contained in Is It Night or Day? And at one such school, the kids asked her a question. And we will tell you what that question was and how it was answered right after this.
She is far from the
light. Stick around and I'll play three Patty Homan songs later in the show. So... Fern Schumer Chapman is speaking to the class in Madison Junior High in Naperville. It's the spring of 2011. The students had just read her book, Is It Night or Day? And they have some questions for you, don't they, Fern?
Yes. So one student at the end of the presentation stands up and says, what happened to Gerda Katz?
And a logical question.
A logical question, and of course, they are children of the social media age, and they cannot accept that if you want to find somebody, you
can't find them.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had actually tried to find Gerda Katz, but there were a number of Gerda Katzes.
Oh, sure.
Gerda had probably married. I didn't know she'd be alive. And so I didn't push.
That's also the thing. Decades had passed.
Right. I left the school, and I didn't give it another thought. 3 months later, I was giving speeches in Boston. And my mother, who doesn't leave voicemails and texts at that time, is leaving messages everywhere. Call me, call me, call me. And at the end of a very busy day, I finally call her, and she can't talk. I say hello, and she doesn't say anything. And I said, what's wrong? And she finally gets out the word Gerda. And I said, did you hear from her? And she said, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the places in the book in like Finding My Twin where I really choked up. These kids went about the business of being kids, didn't they?
They would not take no for an answer, and they decided to make it a class project to
with their teacher's approval. The teacher thought it was a great idea, too.
The teacher thought it was a great idea to locate and then reunite these two old friends who hadn't seen each other in 73 years.
They found her. But these kids, God love kids. They had her name, the name of the ship, and Seattle, basically, to go on, right?
Right.
And they found her, God love, Fern Schumer Chapman is an old newspaper woman, and God love newspapers. That's how they found her.
That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
They went through Seattle Times archives, and they found a Gerda Katz who had a Girl Scout troop and who had graduated high school. And then they found a wedding announcement. And that would prove to be the turning point in the research, because then they would have her married name.
And the story moves on from there. I mean, here you write, it's so great. The first emails, and we are, ladies and gentlemen, in the email age, where they start corresponding with each other, where Gerda writes, "Dear Edith, I have thought of you often, 73 years later, folks, thought of you often, and am so thankful that you found me. Can't wait till we speak together." They do more than speak together, don't they?
Well, they're eventually reunited. They had one phone conversation where they didn't really say anything. They just cried.
They cried. I know.
They just cried for 20 minutes and then hung up.
You can't even imagine the emotional substance of those tears. You know what I mean? Then it gets even that. Well, you've got pictures in the book of them together and the kids. Kids were pretty pleased with themselves, weren't they?
Well, yes, they really were. So what ended up happening is they invited us to the school. They wanted Gerda to come and be reunited at the school.
She wasn't healthy enough, right?
She wasn't ready to travel. And so they had an event around, well, in May or so, and we went to the school, and it was a very emotional experience because the kids' band played My Country, 'Tis of Thee, and they had a birthday party for my mother, and that was special because in Germany, just before she left, nobody came to her party. So it was quite powerful for the kids to see my mother. And then after that, there was a local newspaper story that ran in Naperville, and the Oprah Winfrey Show had been looking for stories of lost and found reunion.
This did it. Yeah.
And so they orchestrated the reunion itself, and we flew out to Seattle, Washington. And in one of the major hotels there, the reunion took place. Oprah Winfrey filmed all of this.
Yeah.
And I was able to get this screen captures from the actual reunion. And that's what you're looking at there from the Oprah show.
Why didn't it says when Gerda spotted Edith, he jumped right off the sofa, both her arms shot straight up in joyful thanks. "Why didn't you write?" Edith asks as they hug. For decades, Edith had wondered why Gerda never got in touch after the girls parted. Gerda was startled. "I lost your address," she explained. This is an amazing story. And it is, again, you can get all of the books. Fiona Kogan will be reading this this week, actually. Reading Is It Night or Day? Then she'll move on to Motherland. Then I may give her like Finding My Twin after she reads Is It Night or Day? And you've got another book coming out. We got 5 minutes left here. There's another book coming out this fall.
Right. Before we move on to that, yes. I just want to say anything. That like Finding My Twin really serves as a model now for service learning. There is a huge push in the schools to get kids to do community projects, and this is a great example. There's another piece of it that I think is very important, both about Is It Night or Day, as well as like Finding My Twin, and that is that they try to inspire empathy. Students who read Is It Night or Day identify with Edith and her childhood immigration story. And then, of course, you see the empathy of these students as they do this service learning project to reunite the two old friends.
Yeah, that's very important. That is very important. I know you left the newspaper business a long time ago, but this is such – this is such meaningful work. I mean, it's got to give you a level of satisfaction that 20 bylines can't give you.
Well, it's different, but, you know, the skills I learned at the Tribune certainly
That's
translate.
True. Yeah. You want to talk any about this new book? You'll be back on the show in September to talk about it.
Yes.
This sounds fascinating, too.
Well, my most recent trip with my mother occurred in 2014. We went for the installation of memorial stones in Germany. They install these stones, called Stolpersteine, in front of the homes where the Jewish families lived, because the Jewish homes were handed, like all homes in Germany, handed down generation after generation. And so they're very closely tied with the identity of the family. And as a result, the Westerfeld home was the Westerfeld home for 250 years.
Sure.
Over 50,000 stones have been installed throughout Europe. And this is being done by an artist activist who is trying to create a memory and a place, because none of these people have graves.
Right. Yes,
so
of course. Well.
My mother and I went. And again, because it was such a small town, we had an amazing experience as we attended the installation of these stones in front of her former home. And that's what the next book is about. And again, I'm using pictures and stories to bring this.
There is, as you note, there is still a, especially in a small little town from which your mother is from, a sense of guilt on the part of, I don't know if it's quite survivor's guilt. I think it may be more than that, don't you think?
I mean, I think it's very serious questions which we as a nation face, as well as other countries.
No
when
question.
You've committed crimes, how do you atone?
Yeah.
How do you address this
right.
kind of...
How does, and it's even more important for, how does the ordinary citizen, the ordinary person who didn't turn on the gas somewhere but still is part and parcel of that crime
right.
feel about it.
It's very hard to be a proud German because of this history.
No question. On many things here.
And it's a recent history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And no kidding. How is your mom?
My mom's 91 years old now, and she went from never speaking of her own history to coming to more and more of my speeches. The students line up to hug her because they so deeply identify with her journey as a child. And she's even become so confident that she is giving speeches at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and telling students her story there.
Her journey to this country at 12 is harrowing beyond words, but her recent journey with you is so full of hope.
In part because the students.
Yeah.
The students have really helped her to see that her life has had meaning and is important, and her story is worth telling.
Fern Schumer, you're a good daughter. Fern Schumer Chapman, the author of Motherhood.
Motherland.
Motherland. Is It Night or Day? And Like Finding My Twin, she will be back on in September. Her website, you guys can look this up. You're smart. Fern, FernSchumerChapman. And Dan will put it on the website. So you'll have everything. Thank you for spending an hour in here.
It was
just great. It's always great to see you, too.
Same here.